I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. By my accumulations of the practice of giving and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. By my accumulations of the practice of giving and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. By my accumulations of the practice of giving and so forth, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Sangye Chodan. Sonamye Dola Penjer, Sangye Dubarashu, Sangye Chodan, Soge Chonamla, Chanju Pado, Dane Kaps. Yage jinso kebe sonam ki dola penjir sange dubaray shu. Sange chodan soge chonam la chanju pardo dane gyapsu chi. Yage jinso kebe sonam ki dola penjir sange dubaray shu. Om ye dharma hetu prabhava. Hetum tesham tatha gato yavatat tesham chayo nirodham evam vati mahashramanaye swaham om ye dharma hetu prabhava hetum tesham tatha gato yavatat Tesham chayo niroda evam vati mahashramanaye swaha Om ye dharma hetu prabhava hetum tesham tathagato yavatat Tesham chayo niroda evam vati mahashramanaye swaha. All phenomena arise from causes. The causes are taught by the Tathagata. The cessation of causes were instructed by the great seer.
Deyatha om gade gade paragadhim Arasam gade bodhi swaha dhyata om gade gade paragade Arasam gade bodhi swaha dhyata om gade gade paragade Arasam gade bodhi swaha dhyata om gade gade paragade Arasam gade bodhi swaha dhyata om gade gade paragade Arasam gade bodhi swaha dhyata paragade Arasam gade bodhi swaha
Okay, yesterday we were doing the 11 virtuous metal factors, 11 virtues. Okay, 11 virtues. The first one, faith. The faith is of three kinds, faith of admiration, faith of aspiration, faith of conviction. And the faith of conviction is the faith generated through gaining conviction in a particular topic, in a, any in that particular object. Conviction, say, on the basis of inferential cognition, on the basis of, say, direct perception, on the basis of the two prime cognizers. What are the two prime cognizers? Oh, two prime cognizers. Anyone? Two prime cognizers? Direct prime cognition and the inferential prime cognition. We did that, right?
Yes.
Okay, I think so. Okay, so the faith generated on the basis of the two prime cognitions. Two prime cognitions. Say, for example, if you see something incredibly good qualities in His Holiness the Dalai Lama with your own eyes, you could see them, then this is faith that you generate through, say, great conviction. Say, for example, okay, there's so much of brainwashing happening in mainland China. This fact. And then saying that His Holiness the Dalai Lama is like this, like that, and so forth. And when the Chinese people, they actually see His Holiness, then they start, you know, they say, tears rolling down their eyes. They could see that. Because what they heard earlier is totally very different from what they are seeing with their own eyes. So that is the faith of conviction through direct valid cognition. And then through inference, for example, His Holiness teaches. And as He teaches, from there you could see that wisdom of emptiness, you cannot just look at His Holiness, wow, he has a tremendous wisdom of emptiness, you can't see that. Compassion can be seen, wisdom cannot be seen. So the wisdom can be inferred. Say, if you have good command of experience of emptiness, then you listen to the teachings of His Holiness, then you see that many of the subtle the problems, which they say many people will interpret like this, then there's a little twist coming on the basis of one's personal experience. So say there's a general presentation there when somebody simply vomits what one has learned, and then when the person really experiences, these two are very different. When the person sharing something with experience, there's always some twist, very flexible twist here and there happening. When someone simply shares with you what a person learned and no experience at all, then it's going to be very mechanical. Okay, so that way, say, listen to His Holiness' teachings. From there, you see that, oh, no doubt he has a very profound experience of emptiness. So that is the faith of conviction, drive through inferential cognition. Okay. The next two things, sense of shame out of self-respect, sense of shame out of respect for others. Say, if you are to engage in one particular, say, wrong action, and then before you engage in this wrong action, then one thought will stop you. No, I should not be doing it. If I do it, then it brings embarrassment to me. It brings embarrassment to my near and dear ones. So it says, sense of shame out of self-respect, it would bring embarrassment to me. And it would bring embarrassment to the parents, relatives, and so forth. So this is the sense of shame out of self-respect. And, in Sanskrit, I have no clue of Sanskrit, but it says shri in Tibetan is mwatsa shepa, mwatsa shepa. And in the sense of shame out of respect for others, it is see telyuba. Okay. Sense of shame out of respect for others, avoids evil towards others, basis form unspoiled moral discipline. Then the next one is the pliancy, suppleness. So every time you have a virtue, so this is one thing which is different. You have a virtue, then the mind mind tends to cool down. Mind tends to become calm. When there's opposite virtues happening, the non-virtues arising, and then they say the six root afflictions, then the 20 secondary afflictions, any of these, they arise in you, then what happens is that mind gets disturbed. The mind is disturbed. So the pliancy, the suppleness, is the calmness of your mind. When the mind relaxes, you will feel the ease. So that is the pliancy and suppleness. In general, I'm saying loose sense is because these people debate whether all virtuous mind should necessarily have the pliancy or the suppleness, right? Okay, usually, generally speaking, one way of understanding pliancy, technically, in Tibetan it is xinjiang. Technically speaking, this xinjiang, this experience of the pliancy, this is very advanced, very advanced. It's not something, say for example, you have just a tinge of compassion coming to someone else, and there's a pliancy, no. Generally speaking, look, pliancy, in a strict sense, pliancy has a connotation that which I was explaining to you earlier, I think day 2, 3. Say when you were meditating, shamatha meditation, with shamatha meditation, the full-fledged version of shamatha is that the same initially 9 steps, 9 mental stages, and reaching the ninth step, then mental pliancy accompanied with bliss will come to you. Mental pliancy accompanied with bliss will come to you. Then the text says that then this will disturb your meditation a little bit. Because it's the first time they're experiencing intense bliss and pliancy. Pliancy, this is what I'd like to share with you. So I have no experience with this thing. I did have the experience of the pliancy related to what? The physical exercise, breathing exercise, right? Not really of any meditation, just physical exercise out of desperateness. And how? I think 2 a.m., maybe like 20 years ago, 2 a.m., suddenly I woke up and I was suffering from the asthma attack. I could not breathe properly. And then, because of which I woke up. And then I started breathing so heavily and with the sounds, this sound. And then I have to cough a little, cough. Every time I have to cough to clear the throat. I have to cough. Again, it becomes smooth. And again, it becomes more and more congested, more and more congested. Again, I have to cough. Then, so if I do not get the sleep, then tomorrow, whole class, everything is going to be spoiled. So, what do you do? And I do a little bit of exercise and slept. And still that is happening, the attack is just continuing. And then I become so desperate. Okay, it doesn't matter. Whatever the breath happens, let it happen, I sleep. Even if it stops, it doesn't matter, let me sleep. And I slept, and I just let it go like this, and the breath becomes thinner, thinner, weaker, weaker, weaker. Then how the breath and the mind, these two are so closely connected, I could see that. Then I could not bear, the mind becomes so disturbed like this. I was just observing the mind, it becomes so disturbed. As the breath becomes thinner and thinner, and weaker and weaker and weaker, the mind is so disturbed that there's no chance for sleep. So then I went to hospital. I went to clinic to have their checkup, and the doctor prescribed me some medicine for the allergy or the asthma. Then I started taking this medicine. Then again it finished. Again I have to go to see a doctor. And before I went to the doctor, I had one Indian friend in that small city, Hubli city. From my monastery, we had to drive like 45 minutes. And my Indian friend, he was a little amazed. Dorji, why did you come to city? Why did you come? I said, I came to the hospital. What for? Asthma attack. I said, for asthma attack, never go to hospital. You have to do your yoga. Then he said, I'll teach you yoga. But then he's so, but like, it seems like I got the impression that he's a perfectionist. He doesn't want to teach me without the very precise steps. He said that I'll get a book, I'll go through this once more, refresh myself, and then I'll teach you. Which means I might have to wait for another 1 month. And then the same day I returned, and then there was one English monk. And he came to me, and I told everything, and he said that, oh, he's fine. And the next day, he brought the book, this English monk, he brought the book. Then he taught me all these exercises. And I did the exercise for 1 week. Within 1 week, the breath, you wouldn't believe. The breath was terrible. What is explained there? This English word, suppleness, plans, I could feel that. And it is also like if you have, you know, something, say, small children, when they get something, say, chocolate, which they never experienced before, then they don't like to eat it. They just skip it, right? They just feel like losing it if they eat it. So this was the kind of feeling that I was getting. I don't want to breathe. It's so precious. It's so supple. Amazingly supple, which I never experienced before. Amazingly supple. I don't know whether this bliss, but no doubt it's so supple and so pliant. Okay, so this kind of experience is described when you reach that level, you cross the ninth level, then you experience this. So the suppleness and the ecstasy, the bliss, pertaining to your mind. Then, because of this, then there's going to be a little bit of a tinge of excitement coming, which will disturb your meditation. And through further meditation, it will be transferred to the physical. Because of the physical, it becomes so prominent, the bliss and the pliancy. Again, it will just continue to disturb the meditation with the excitement. Then through further training, and then when it changes to the mental once more, then it becomes not only incredibly great, the pliancy, and this will also enhance your meditation instead of disturbing it. So at that point, you have achieved the proper shamatha. Okay, so this is the level of the pliancy. So from that point of view, say a virtue, just a tinge of compassion for someone else. So how can this have such a pliancy? This is the debate. But then what I would say is that just as what we did yesterday, in a subtle sense, the pliancy can be there, from my point of view. Pliancy can be there in all virtues, may not to the extent of the pliancy of the shamatha, proper shamatha or proper special insight, but then the pliancy is there. Say, a mental, particularly what I would say is that maybe say people, it could be age, it could be because of the age factor, I don't know, maybe like 30, 40 years, or maybe the sharpness of your mind, sharpness of the discernment, sharpness of the discrimination. Say, at one point you could feel you could feel the difference. Say, you have these non-virtuous thought coming, and then a tinge of disturbance there. Say, particularly, for example, attachment is there, you may not feel the disturbance. With anger, you could feel the disturbance. With attachment, you may not feel the disturbance. It's so pleasant. Then, when you, for example, say, when you think about emptiness of that particular object of attachment, you think about it, and then you don't really say that, oh, there must be mental agitation there, mental, say, the excitement there, mental, what, uproar there. Mental disturbance said, no, you don't say anything. Just think about emptiness of the object to which you feel attached. Think about it. The moment you get a glimpse of it, instantly, physiologically, you could feel it. You could feel that it dissolves. Then you realize that even at times of attachment, okay, gross attachment, yes, the mind is so disturbed.
even with a subtle tinge of attachment, with a tinge of attachment, ordinary people will not discern it as mental disturbance. You'll not feel it. It seems to be as though like the oil, described as oil being absorbed by the paper. Right? Paper very smoothly absorbs it. You will not feel the jerk like this. But with anger, you could feel the jerk. And the very gross attachment, then the jerk is felt. But the subtle one is as though like it's so pleasant. In actuality, it's not. How do you know that? You would think about the emptiness of that very particular object of the attachment. And the moment you get a glimpse of it, then you could feel the contrast between the state of the mind when you had this a tinge of the attachment, the state of the mind when you had a glimpse of the emptiness. Glimpse of it instantly, as though like the boiling water simply settles. When you there's boiling water there, then you a particular milk boiling and just overflowing, start to overflow, you put cold water in it, what will happen? Everything will go back. It'll instantly go back. Likewise, this boiling state of the mind, in actuality, is a big disturbance. You don't feel there is a disturbance. Only when you get a glimpse of experience of emptiness, then you see that everything simply settles. Then you could feel the calmness. This is known as the pliancy, calmness, and your mind feels so pliant and so flexible, malleable. Okay, so this is the suppleness and pliancy, not in the strict sense as understood in the Shamatha meditation. Okay, it says, enables the mind to engage in positive acts as wished, interrupting mental or physical rigidity. So this is the pliancy, you understood in terms of the physical or mental serviceability. Physical or mental serviceability. Your mind, your body, your mind becomes so agile, so serviceable. So that is the pliancy. Well, with the body, do you see the pliancy? If you don't do the exercise regularly, then say, the first dawn of the rigidity of the body will be felt in your 30s. If you don't do exercise, then the proper rigidity will be felt after 40s, right? Whereas if you do the exercise, then the moment you stop exercise for 2-3 days, you could feel it after 40s, right? Okay, for the young one, they will not feel it. Same age, 17, 18 below, you will not feel it, right? Whether you do exercise, you don't do exercise, you don't feel the difference, right? After that, you could feel it. So that is the pliancy, the serviceability. Okay, so next is equanimity. Equanimity. Upeksha or tangyum, Tibetan tangyum, peaceful mind, not being overpowered by delusions, no mental dullness or agitation. Okay. Equanimity, there are three kinds of equanimity. Equanimity in terms of, I don't know about the English, so let me see and then you try to work that on your own. First I will explain. But this word, equanimity, is used in English. We borrowed this word, equanimity. So one is in terms of the equanimity in terms of the four, as a part of the Four Noble, four immeasurables. Equanimity in relation to the Four Immeasurables. Number two, equanimity in the sense of neutral feelings. Neutral feeling. Equanimity in the context of neutral feelings. Number three, equanimity in the context of application. Application of remedy. What is the first one? In relation to four immeasurables. So there, within four immeasurables, we see that one is in relation to the others and the other in relation to yourself. But the concept is the same. And they just remedy the imbalance of your thought. Remedying the imbalance of your thought where you have excessive attachment towards some and aversion towards others. There is a total imbalance. So this imbalance, you try to balance this by maintaining a sense of equanimity. equanimity, where, say, your near and dear ones, if you are to be really affectionate and loving towards your near and dear ones, you should equally be loving and caring towards your neutral people and the enemies as well. Why? Why are you attached? Why are you so loving and caring towards your near ones? Because they give me love and affection towards me. They give me love and affection. It's just a matter of time. Even these neutral beings and the enemies, they also were your near and dear ones many times in the former lifetimes. So therefore, they also gave you so much love and affection. It's just a matter of time. So from that point of view, there should not be imbalance of your thought, attitude. So if you are to love your near and dear ones, you should equally love the neutral beings and enemies. Okay, this is equanimity pertaining to the four immeasurables. The next one is equanimity pertaining or in the context of the neutral feelings. The feelings, there are three kinds. One is happiness, other one is sadness or the pain. The happiness, the pain, and the neutral. So where you are in a state where you are not on the two sides, happiness and the pain, which is known as neutral, and it's also known as the feeling of equanimity. Okay, it may never be good English, it doesn't matter. This is understanding that you need, because in the Tibetan word, there's no problem. In English, we borrow the word, so we can't do anything. Okay, then number three is what? Equanimity in terms of the applying the remedies, remedy application. That is particularly in relation to your meditation, particularly in the context of meditation. In your meditation, in the mornings when we do the meditation, I was constantly, by the way, what are the four points of the meditation? You remember? What are they? It is my lack of clarity. Okay, the four points related to the breathing meditation. Physical posture, focal point, identifying the errors, then the remedies, application of the remedies, Say the body posture, focal point, then identifying the errors, and then applying the remedies. Form. So of the form, equanimity here, the third version of the equanimity is in the context of applying remedies. So, what did we learn about the point number four? Should you fall under the prey of laxity and excitement, then you should apply the remedies, which are mindfulness and introspection, mindfulness. Okay, so let's say you are meditating, and then your mind starts scattering. When your mind starts scattering, then once in a while you have to apply the introspection and the mindfulness, right? With the introspection, you have to see whether your mind is distracted in a lax state or still in the meditation. Then it's distracted. Then mindfulness brings it back. Fine. Okay. Now, imagine that you are not studying at all. Your exam is after 1 week and you are not studying. Your mother is so concerned. And do you know that your mother is always very concerned about you over every little thing? You know that? With every little thing your mother is concerned, right? Okay. So once in my room in Dharamsala, my sister and then my two, three cousin sisters, all were there. All mothers were there. And then one of them would start and, "Oh, I'm worried about my son." And then the other would say, "Oh, yes. Oh, yes," means she should be picking up the first discussion. No, she started a new discussion. She said, "Yes, I'm worried about my son. You know, he's not studying this." And the third one said, "Oh, yes, this is my problem with my son." Right? Nobody's listening to anyone. Right? Nobody's listening to anyone. And everyone's talking, but nobody's listening. And all about my son, my son, my son. Nobody says, "Oh yeah, your son." Nobody says it. "My son, my son, my son." Okay. So why did I say this? It is, should be related to the application, but how? So if I poke my nose too much, then I get lost. Okay, what to do? Okay. So it may worsen me, please don't. Okay. So for the time, Lizzie, if something clicks, then I'll share with you. Okay. So let's say the mindfulness and introspection, and they say equanimity. Equanimity. Say, okay, when you something getting back. Okay. So when you are yes. Okay, I got it. Okay. So say your mother is so worried about you. You are not studying. And your exam is what? After 1 week. And your mother is so worried. You are not worried. Your mother is worried about you. Then say, your mother asks you, hey, study well. Study well, right? And then finally you feel so sympathetic. You feel the pain of the mother. And then you start studying. Then you are really absorbed into the exams. You are really absorbed into your studies, right? And then your mother comes, right? In 5 minutes, your mother comes. Hey, how are you studying? Right? Hey, shall I serve you tea? Right? And then, yes, I'm studying. Again, the mother comes with the juice. In 5 minutes, hey, are you studying? Shall I serve you juice? What happens? Can you maintain focus? What happens? Your mother's what? To make sure that you study. Is she helping or is she harming you? She is harming you because she is doing something which ought not to be doing. When you are going so smoothly, she should not be doing this again and again. If the remedy is overly applied, it is very harmful. Right? So therefore, when the meditation is going very smoothly, then you are advised not to apply the remedies. Right? So the remedy should be maintained as neutral. Introspection, mindfulness, they should be kept aside. Particularly introspection should be kept aside for the time being. When the mind is flowing very well, then keep the introspection aside. If you introspect, you disturb the meditation. Right? So when what? When the meditation is going so well. Okay. So this is the... when your meditation is going so well, then in terms of the introspect, the remedies, you should keep them neutral. Neutral meaning you don't apply them. Equanimity. Equanimity in the sense of neutrality. You keep it neutral. That is third understanding. Okay. So here it is more in terms of the mind is not fluctuated. Mind is not fluctuated between the two extremes. It becomes neutral. Same, no excitement with happiness, no aversion or feeling low. So it's more like a very peaceful state of the mind when the mind, the rest, that is equanimity. Okay, next is conscientiousness. Conscientiousness. Conscientiousness is the same as what it says here, causes avoiding negative acts and doing good, mind with detachment, non-hatred, non-ignorance, and enthusiasm. Okay, conscientiousness in Tibetan is pagyu. Pagyu. So always pagyu is more like not really mindfulness. It is more like say, what it says there is more very direct. The pagyu is conscientiousness is more like where you are constantly aware what I should be doing, what I should not be doing. Constantly aware of that. That is known as the conscientiousness. What I should be doing, what I should not be doing. Right, that you are being aware of that. Okay, the next one is, so what it says here is causes avoiding negative acts and doing good. So when you are really aware, oh, this is what I should be doing, this is what I should not be doing, this is going to be harmful, this is going to be helpful. So with this very strong awareness, then automatically it will avoid you engaging into negative actions and will allow you to engage in positive attachment, the positive actions. The next three, non-attachment, non-aversion, and non-ignorance. The three poisons of the mind are referred to as the attachment, aversion, and anger. Attachment, aversion, and ignorance. Attachment, aversion, ignorance. Now the opposite of these three, non-attachment, non-aversion, and non-ignorance. Say non-attachment is, say if there is, say, a beautiful flower, then automatically our mind is pulled. This is the attachment. And then, oh, now my mind is being pulled. I should run away, right? Keep distance, refrain, deliberately control your mind. This is one thing, right? This one thing. Okay, this one thing. Then the next would be see the flower, and then you appreciate it. Oh, it's nice. It's nice. Do you want it? No, I have so many of those flowers. I don't need it. But you do appreciate it. There's appreciation there, but your mind is not pulled, right? Number two. Then number three would be you see flowers which are much, much more beautiful than this, right? Okay, as compared to a place where there's no flower, this is a beautiful flower. But overall speaking, this is nothing, right? So your mind is not pulled. So there's so many ways by which your mind... So the thing, why attachment is seen as negative, is not because it is attachment. Don't say like this. It is attachment, don't do it. Oh, so you're eating good food. No, this you're a spiritual person. You shouldn't be doing it. Oh, you're having a good car. No, you shouldn't be doing it. This is a clear understanding that a person does not know what is spirituality, particularly what is Nalanda Buddhism. Right? Okay. Say, why? Why, say, for example, forget about cars, whatever, luxury, whatever. Even just take the simple example of a flower. Why, when the attachment is there, was the problem? Was the problem, right? This gives me happiness. This flower gives me happiness. Right? No. This attachment. And what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it? Okay, this is a question. This question has to be asked. Right? Only then you will know, really appreciate what is Dharma. Only then you will appreciate in what way the Buddha Shakyamuni, his teaching is so profound. In what way? In what way it is so helpful to us. Okay, so say, just take the example of a flower. Once you get the full import of this on the basis of the flower, then you can apply it to anything else, with anything else. Say, Rolex watch, or anything, iPhone 6 Plus, whatever, right? The same object can be poison, the same object can be medicine. It doesn't mean that good cars, good, you know, these things are always poison. No, that's not true, right? Okay, let's see. Say the flower. Oh, there's a flower. There's a flower. Oh, that's nice. Oh, it's wonderful. It's a beautiful flower. Right? Oh, I need it. Right? I need it. And many people, they cut it. Right? Beautiful flower growing there. They cut it. Oh, no. It's so bad. No. I would say don't do it. Right? Just as you enjoy this flower, let others also enjoy this. Many people, they may have metal, you know, so always seeing things very dirty around, garbage, and everything so sloppy and so dirty, disorganized, and your mind in little, you know, heavy. The moment you see a very fresh flower growing there, it gives such a joy, and it instantly soothes the person. Don't cut this. Keep it there. Let others, many, if not thousands, at least like 10, 20, 100 people enjoy this for the next one week, right? You cut it, it'll just stay for another one day, that's it. And then you only see that, right? Only you. And the next moment it starts drooping, you don't want it there. You want it to, you don't get a place to throw it away, right? So better keep it there. So what I'm saying is that, say, this flower, it gives such a joy in you, right? And then I want it, and you cut like this. So I want it. That's the problem. Why this is a problem? Why this is a problem? What made your mind is pulled by this object. Your mind is pulled by this object, right? Had it been the case that the flower is not there, your mind is at rest. And your mind is pulled, right? And then the next object again pulls. Third object pulls. Fourth object pushes you. Fifth object pulls, push. Your mind is always pull and push like this. Do you have rest? You don't have rest. If somebody says, if somebody grabs you from your chest, from the cloth, from the front, and then pulls, push, pull, push for like, you know, 2 hours like this. Wow, what a peace. Is this a peace? No, you don't have any rest. You will say that it's human, it's violation of human rights. And this flower is actually doing that. This flower is actually violating the human rights. 100%. It's pulling you, and you don't feel it. You say that, I like it. No, actually this flower is pulling you. Pulling you, right? And then, when will you know that it's pulling you? When do you know that, when will you know that it's a human rights violation? When you constantly see things, you know, say in the supermarkets, you go to, oh, this brand thing. You don't know that you're exhausted. Your mind is all pull, push. And then your mother points to a cheaper one. You want to, you buy this one, right? You say, no. Right? Pushed. Right? And then there's a more branded, expensive one. Your mind is pulled. Push. Your mind is constantly pulled by what? It's not voluntarily. If the object is there, that object decides. If there's no beautiful object there, your mind is not pulled. It's rest. So this constant pull, push. You won't believe it happens for like another 2 hours. You go home. You feel so tired. You're already very exhausted. You could feel it only when you're at home. You watch the television. Like 2 hours. Constantly watch the television. Meant to relax you after your fight with the colleagues, your problem with the boss, right? The boss just shouting at you, your colleagues, you know, there's a little bit of friction amongst your colleagues. 8 hours, just struggling to finish 8 hours. Finish that, and you come home, and you meant what? Oh, I'm so exhausted. I like to rest and to take a little rest, and you watch television. You watch television 2 hours, finish, right? You are even more tired. You're even more tired. So because constantly your mind is busy, right? Your mind feels so tired. So therefore, what is wrong with this? The flower is there, you appreciate it, it's fine, right? The moment, I like it, which means your mind is pulled, right? Your mind is pulled. So therefore, the Acharya, Aryadev, in 400 stanzas, in his book 400 stanzas, he said that Say, the experience of, for example, say, eating momos, the first piece is very delicious. No. 50th piece, is so repulsive. 50th piece, if you eat it first, and the first piece, if you left it 50th one will give you such a pleasure. And the first piece, which left in 50th, it will push you away, right? There's no difference from the object, right? So what is happening? He said that because the 50th one is so repulsive, it's not because of the object. Something's wrong with you. Uneasiness is created by the 50th. No, this uneasiness was actually already started from point one. It gets accumulated, right? Second momo, third momo, then this temptation slowly disappears. So that uneasiness has already started from the first piece, which you were unaware of. And then it starts accumulating. And then when it's reached the 50th, then please take it away. Right? Please take it away. Which means that there's no temptation, there's no desire. It just manifests in the form of so much of the disgust. Okay. So when you say, I like it, the pull is happening, this is where you lose your freedom. Somebody, you know, grabs you from your clothes and push. What do you say? I lost my freedom. There's no freedom. I lost my freedom. Loss of the freedom is the worst of the miseries. Pull and push, involuntary pull and push, is the loss of freedom. Loss of freedom is misery. Of all the miseries, this loss of freedom is the worst of the miseries. This is samsara, right? Whereas, if there's a flower, you appreciate it. You appreciate it, and it relaxes your mind, and the pull, okay, I don't need it, right? I don't need it. Let everybody enjoy it. Let everybody enjoy it. I don't need it. Okay, keep it there, right? So you can enjoy this. You can enjoy this, but the clinging is not there. Likewise, a car, iPhone 6 Plus, or whatever, right? Say, you can just use it for your own benefit, and then whereas when the clinging is not there, it's perfectly fine. What's wrong with it? Right? What's wrong with it? So in the first place, why did we come to Dharma? Did you come to Dharma so that you were frustrated with good food? Frustrated with iPhone 6 Plus? No, there's a mental pain there. You feel, you know, say, I don't want miseries. I want happiness, right? And in the Dharma says, don't go for happiness. What's the point? Then you should not have come there in the first place, right? So therefore, the purpose is be very practical. Don't try to idealize or what? Say, don't try to make things so rigid. Simply understand the basic concepts. And then on the basis of that, you should know what is Dharma and act accordingly. Finally, you should be a happy person. This is the point. You should be a happy person. Dharma is meant to make you a happy person. Not that the happy person should be for Dharma. No. I remember my teacher, Kenlam Rinpa, the author of the Karma by, you know, the Calming the Mind. He said, I was so fascinated. I was in school before he became my teacher. I was just in school, class maybe 11. I was so much into physics, and just thinking of, you know, oh, Dharma, what is Dharma? Just Dharma, right? Physics is the main thing. It was what I had a pride in physics in school. Then my friend somehow introduced me to my teacher, and then I happened to be there. And then my friend must have introduced me to the teacher, that, oh, there's a young boy who is very intelligent, who is into physics, and who is not so keen into Dharma, right? And my teacher was also a little apprehensive. You know, teacher meaning, again, also a little apprehensive. Oh, this boy can, you know, be very sarcastic about Dharma like this, and who are also a little decent, right? And just the first meeting, I was in school, a very young school boy, maybe age 17. And then I sat there, and of course I was not that bad, right? Not that rude. And I sat there, very gentle, calm. And then I could sense that, you know, the teacher was also a little apprehensive as to what this boy may, you know, in what way he would attack Dharma. But of course, who's going to attack? The only thing is that I may try to ask some questions. Then when I started asking, then he said one thing. It was just such an eye-opening. He said, if you just ask yourself whether you want happiness or not, if you don't want happiness, forget about Dharma. Dharma is not required. Just dump the Dharma in the dustbin. He said, wow. He's a spiritual person, dedicated whole life into Dharma, and he's daring to say such thing. It's so sensible. Right? Dharma, this is so precious, this is number one, my happiness number two. No, he's saying that your happiness is number one. And this Dharma, if you want happiness, then you have to look for ways and means to get the happiness. So these ways and means is a means, not the end. Your happiness should be the end. Your happiness is the main, right? For happiness, you have to go for Dharma. Not for Dharma, you have to go for happiness. No, your happiness should not be for Dharma. Dharma should be for your happiness. Wow, it's amazing, right? So that way, only if you know Dharma so well, then there's no contradiction in, you know, say, leading a very comfortable life, at the same time, very spiritual, extensive, incredibly evolved person. There's no contradiction. right? Usually when we say dharma means someone should be very poor, right? Very poor, who should be running away from good food, good house, good car. This is not the idea. And very poor, so rich in this, you know, self-centered, self-grasping, ignorance, so intact with you. So dharma is overcome these two. Dharma is not to overcome the external facilities, right? But at times, for some people, when we are so weak, we can easily be affected by external conditions. So when our mind is so weak, where the external conditions can easily trigger attachment, aversion, so forth, then you are advised to fence yourself. Keep yourself, think that you are Alfonso Mango, not tree, but a sapling, right? You are so weak, so vulnerable, so weak. When you're so weak, then you might have to fence a little bit. Fence yourself from iPhone 6 Plus. Fence yourself from the whatever. Whereas when you grow stronger, where you can have the iPhone 6 Plus, and if you lose it, as though like your heart is, disappeared, as though like your heart has a tumor, right? If that does not happen, lose it, what's it? It's like just losing just a pen or just one candy. It's fine, right? Whereas if you have it, use it, you can do so many things, so many good things, right? For example, in many cases, even the mobiles, they can save lives. There are cases. I have my personal experience. I will not share that with you. Mobile saved a life. Okay, I will not go into detail. Yeah. So therefore, if you don't have the mobile, if I did not have the mobile, that was impossible. By now, gone. Right? So therefore, these things, it's just a matter of how strong you are. Right? So finally, what's the point? The point is that, say the things where your mind is involuntarily pulled and pushed, this is where you lose your freedom. Loss of freedom is misery. This is what you don't want, because of which you come for dharma. Right? So coming for dharma is to cut the involuntary pull and push, not the object. Don't cut the object. Right? Don't cut the object. Cut the involuntary misery. Worst of the misery. What is that? Involuntary pull and push. And who creates the involuntary pull and push? Self-grasping ignorance and self-centered attitude. How? Okay. So before we go any further, what I like to do is that if you turn to page 31, important topics in Buddhist psychology. Page 31, point number 10. What's point number 10? Self-grasping, ignorance, self-centered attitude. Okay, this I will take up there, right? So, oftentimes, since the morning practice, we have been talking about the two demons, self-grasping, ignorance, self-centered attitude, self-grasping, ignorance, self-centered attitude. We need to know what is self-grasping, self-centered attitude. Okay. So, say, first let us go like this. What for you have come to Dharma? With the hope that by going to this Dharma, my miseries will go away. Right? I don't want miseries. Okay. What does it mean by misery? What misery you have? All miseries can be boiled down to involuntary pull and push, which is the loss of freedom. When somebody involuntarily pulls and pushes you, which means you don't have the right. You are prey to someone else's pull and push, right? Which means you don't have the freedom. A loss of freedom is the greatest of the miseries, right? Okay. So what is nirvana? Nirvana is where the involuntary pull and push stop. Involuntary pull and push stops. Because of which, even though there are external luxuries there, they are incredible, the external facilities are there, but your mind maintains just calm, peaceful, whether it's with the external luxury, without external luxury, is the same for you. Right? There's no pull and push happening. That is the nirvana. Okay. With this, we need to know, now if this is what for you have come to dharma, where you don't want to have the miseries. What is meant by miseries? What? Involuntary pull and push. For example, say, can you, if you don't understand this point, let me just give me an example of any misery which you don't want, which made you come to dharma. Or some of you, some of the people like me, right? Whether you like it or not, you are born into dharma. Whether you like it or not, even if you don't like it, you're born into dharma. Right? Some people, they come into dharma. I would say those people who come into dharma, from one point, you're more lucky. From other point, you know, from other angle, say people who are born into this dharma, they are more lucky. Right? Both sides are there. Okay. So those who come into dharma, generally speaking, they come into dharma and deliberately make the dharma into poison. Even those people who come into dharma. Oh, I'm Sakya. I'm Giluk. I'm Nyingma. Right? Okay, you are following Giluk, right? Right? So we're saying that I'm Nyingma. Oh, you're following Nyingma, right? I'm Giluk. This is poison. You come into the world of medicine to convert medicine into poison. There's no medicine left now. Right? Whereas many who come from outside, they come into dharma. And then how they come into, except for these people who say, I'm Giluk, I'm Nyingma, I request, don't do this. If somebody asks you, what religion you are following, what Buddhism you are following, you just say, I don't know about Buddhism, I don't know about anything. I'm simply looking for the ways and means to cut this involuntary pull and push. Just say this. I'm looking for the medicine to, you know, to stop this misery of involuntary pull and push. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm following, right? And somebody say, you're Gilu, you're Nyingma, you just say, I don't know. Right? If someone says that, oh, I'm Nyingma, I'm Gilu, then he says, I'm sorry, you are involuntary push. The involuntary pull is added to you. Because I'm Nyingma, I'm Gilu means my involuntary pull is, the pull is there. When the pull is there, push is there. When you say, I'm Gilu, then the Nyingma word, I'm not. There's a push there. Right? If you are creating more pull and push. So this is not dharma. This is poison. Right? Okay, so with this, then the question arises, what do you mean by misery? So I explained involuntary pull and push. If you don't understand at this point, don't worry. Just give me an example of misery. Any misery, right? Any misery. If you don't want to keep confidential, then share with us. And then we will see that from the misery, illustration of misery, we will see how this is involuntary pull and push. Right? Okay. Can anyone give an example of misery?
Attachment to people?
No, misery I'm talking about. No, simply because you feel attached to people, though, so therefore it's so poisonous, it's so painful, I want to dharma. No. Right? When you feel attached, particularly misery, the kind of misery that we encounter with, which takes us into dharma, is usually not attachment. Right? It's always aversion. Aversion is the one which is the manifest misery that we identify as miseries, right? Then you go further, you expand your knowledge, then you see that attachment is what causes the aversion, and the aversion is what you directly dislike, right? Okay, just tell me, any misery? Yes, over there?
The end of a romantic relationship.
Okay, let's say this. End of a romantic relationship, right? How this is a pull and push, involuntary pull and push. Same, which is better, right? Excitement with relationship, and then the end, with the end, okay, bye-bye, now our relationship is done, okay, bye, right? So you're going to America, I'm going to Australia, bye-bye. Is this how the relationship ends? Right? I don't think there's ever such a, you know, end of relationship like this. Right? Okay, bye-bye. Right? So thank you. Never. It's never like this. I don't think so. Huh? I don't think so. And in the West... Oh, particularly in the West, in Asia, maybe because of the community, norms and so forth. It's not that Asians are better, West are the worst. No, we all same. We're all rich in this. We are all equally rich, right? So, because of the societal norms, societal, the, what is the norms, the social world, conventions, you know, then things become more easily prominent, less easily prominent, these things. Otherwise, we're all just equal. Okay, so in the West, oh, just say second marriage, third marriage, this is so common. In the East, it's much less. In the East, it's much. Not that the East, Easterners are better. No. The first marriage, oh, it's my third marriage, fourth marriage, fifth marriage. Second marriage is so common. This was what really, literally, I could not believe when I was in England. So I was invited by one lady for a dinner. Oh, look, I'm too much poking into my nose. Yeah. And then she said that, oh, so my son is there, right? And then, and my the son's stepfather is also there. What is Mr. son's stepfather? Right? Okay. Then, and my stepdaughter is also there, and my stepdaughter is cooking for you. Stepdaughter means? Daughter of? Huh? A new husband, right? This is your understanding. No? So, going there, another current. Okay, let's say, listen further. Listen, what happened? She said, okay, my stepdaughter is also there. She's cooking for us. Wow, okay, thank you. And then I was there. And then I met her husband. And then her husband says that, okay, so after this, I have to, it's now too late, and I may offer a ride to my stepdaughter. I was confused. Whose daughter is that? I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. The mother is my stepdaughter, and the father is saying it's my stepdaughter. And now, whose daughter is that? I was so confused. Right? So, what happened was that the father got married to the mother of that girl, and so the father became the stepfather, and the girl became the stepdaughter, right? And then there was a divorce, and then got married to this woman, and then she became the stepdaughter of this, and then she also became the stepdaughter of this. So now the worst thing is that, so if it is the third marriage, right? Which means that, hey, bye-bye, right? Two times bye-bye? No, fight. Two times fight. You did it. I did not do it, right? And then maybe many times physical fights, court case, anger, jealousy. And then it is not that day one, it finished. No, day one, okay, who's going to cook the food? This question. The first meeting, right? I'll cook. Well, I'll do it. Oh, it's just a rest. What do you like to have? Right? Then, after a few weeks, then a few months, hey, who's going to cook? Right? Then, after some time, hey, you put a kettle on the this, and I'll do this. Right? Right? Then slowly, you do not do that, right? Again, then slowly, right? Then all this, it becomes worse. Then finally started fighting, right? Fighting, so much of anger. Then you just feel nothing is the air, and fighting, beating, both sides, right? Both sides, it's not just one side, right? Both sides. And then this has been for like, say, at least few weeks, in many cases, few months. In some cases, few years like this. So much of torture happening, both sides. Right? Maybe the one who is more dominant is also going to torture himself or herself. Right? Okay. So this is the, so this eventually then decided to break. Right? It's so painful. You know? It's so painful. So what made this is better or right, this is better, or not having anything is also which is better. As compared to this, when you go through this pain, then you realize this is too much. Right? Not having is better. So therefore, what I'm saying is that this is what I don't want this, and still it is happening. This is involuntary push. Your mind is being pushed by it. I don't want to have it. And then initially, what made this? I don't want to have it. It's already there. I don't want to have it. What made it like this? See, a neighbor will not say that. A neighbor, you will not have a divorce case with a neighbor. Divorce case with your, you know, someone married. Neighbor, you don't have this because you do not have this initial binding. Initial binding was not there. So this initial binding was involuntary binding. It's not voluntary. It's involuntary binding, right? Because you see something there attractive. That pulls you. And then there was very painful separation, acute painful separation. And if it's the third marriage, how many painful separations? Three times. So many fights. Three times. Right? So therefore, this is what I'm saying. This is the pain. This is the involuntary pull and push, right? Now you may say, that, oh, it doesn't matter. But in some cases, there is such a good relationship. I agree with it fully. I know many people like this. Even within them, I could see there's a little friction there. I could see that. There's a chemistry there. I could see the chemistry. Even between those people who are so, you know, who are so friendly, you know, so considerate of each other. Even among them, there's a chemistry that I could feel it. I could see the little cold feeling there. Even though with those people who are so respected, both of them very considerate, still there. Because the moment two of them are together, 50% of your freedom is lost. And 50% freedom on the outside is also lost. It's not just, you know, you. Think of the other side also. Right? So that way, there's a problem there. So what I'm saying is that involuntary pull and push is so evident in this. You see that? In this. Any other miseries? Sickness, aging, and then losing your near and dear ones. Right? Okay. Losing near and dear ones. Losing near and dear ones is what? Involuntary pull or involuntary push? Involuntary push. You don't want this separation, and it happens, right? So this pain of losing near dear ones is so acute. And when you just listen to some of the mindsets of the people who go through this, it's pathetic. There's one person who's already in his 50s. So after seeing the demise of his mother, after seeing the demise of his mother, he became as though like, you know, someone who just lost his sense, right? And then when actually meeting, he was reporting, he told me that now I could see any person I encounter with, I could see as though like they are like the ashes. Because he saw the one who loved the most, his mother, you know, cremated. And the ashes, he saw that, and he could not believe the ashes, that this is the ashes of my mother, to whom he loved so much. Then because of this, any other human being he saw at one point, he could say, it's so like ashes moving, right? It's so painful. He just lost the feeling of sanity, just lost the feeling of peace, calmness, all this. Look, this is the problem, right? So losing near and dear ones is so acutely painful. So acutely painful. So this one, you don't want this. You don't want this. This pain, you don't want this. Which means that you don't want this. And you just want to run away from it. There's no freedom. You have to run away from this. So having to, which means it's painful. This is involuntary. There's no freedom. You have to. Whether you like it or not, you have to run away. This involuntary push, right? If you really think it like this, then we see that, and say, for example, if you go through stress, sadness, you don't want these feelings, and yet you are facing it, you're confronted with this feeling, you don't want it, which means you want to run away from it. What makes you run away from it? Because of the pain. So this pain is pushing you, right? Involuntary push. And involuntary push is a loss of freedom. You want to rest. You don't want to run away. But this pain makes you to run away. It does not make you to rest. So this loss of freedom. Loss of freedom is real. So what I'm saying is that what for we are into dharma? What for we are into dharma is because we have miseries. We don't want miseries, and you are looking for a solution from the dharma, that the miseries are gone. You're getting it? And what is that misery? Misery is what? Finally, it is in the form of involuntary pull and push. Involuntary pull. Why involuntary pull and push is misery? Involuntary pull and push is loss of freedom. Loss of freedom is the greatest of the misery. Right? Which would you prefer? Say, you are under a boss, and the boss is so harsh. The moment he sees you, she sees you, just scolds you. Just scolds you. Whether you do something good, scolds you. Whether you do something bad, scolds you. Right? And then what do you get? And then you are having food with him. Right? Every day, lunch with him. Or with her. Not only him. Sometimes her also. Right? And the food is so very expensive food. Would you really taste the food? Huh? Right? You eat it like this. Hey, why are you lifting the spoon like this? Right? And then you say, why are you making sound like this? And what is this food? Do you prefer to have a food in your rice, a small, very simple rice and dal at home? Or this very delicious food with this boss? Which do you prefer? Just simple dal, whatever. Even hungry is better than this. You understand it? Why? It's so delicious food. No. Because you don't feel the happiness. There's unhappiness there. There's this unhappiness. You don't want it, and still you bear it, which means involuntary push. Those involuntary pushes, loss of freedom. Loss of freedom is misery. So instead of that, I would rather remain hungry. Right? So that you see as more freedom. So finally, the freedom versus loss of freedom. Loss of freedom is samsara, and freedom is nirvana. Right? And ultimate freedom, which means, what is ultimate freedom? Where no external condition can affect my peace of mind. Whether you're hungry, peace of mind is not altered. Whether somebody abuses you, it cannot affect my peace of mind. Right? Whether you are in cold place, hot place, whether everybody is praising you, still your peace of mind is not stirred. Whether everybody is accusing you, still your peace of mind is not stirred. No external conditions can steal the peace of mind. This is where you have the ultimate freedom. That is nirvana. Right? Okay. So now with this, the three, self-grasping, ignorance, self-centered attitude. I'll explain this, and then we'll finish this 11 virtues. Okay, self-grasping, ignorance, and self-centered attitude. First, let us say self-grasping, ignorance. Self-grasping, ignorance is the ignorance which misconceives an objectively existent phenomena. Self-grasping ignorance is the ignorance which misconceives an objectively existent phenomena. Which misconceives an objectively existent phenomena. Okay. This is the self-grasping. Self-grasping ignorance can be understood in relation to not only with the self as a person, but the self as any other phenomena. Self as with any other phenomena, not necessarily self in the form of a person, myself, not necessary. Self of a flower, self of a world, self of the sun, self of the good food, self of the good dress, self of the good company, right? Or the self of bad company, set of the miseries, which meaning the say objectively existent phenomena. Okay. So let's say that
Okay. Let's say that there is, I just have a picture of a flower. Or let's say, I just have a picture of, say, a Swiss chocolate. I just have a picture of Swiss chocolate, right? And then I put it like this. I keep it like this from distance. And then what do you see? You see a real chocolate. Oh, there's a real chocolate in his hand, right? So you misconceive. You misconceive a real chocolate. You're getting it? You misconceive a real chocolate. Okay. You misconceive a real chocolate. Now, I say, how many of you like chocolate? How many of you are very fond of chocolates? Okay. How many of you are not really fond of chocolate? Okay, good. Say one group of people, they are so fond of chocolates, and other, no, right? In fact, it's very fascinating. My father, he was already in his 70s. Now he passed away. He was already in his 70s, and I was very young, maybe age, say, in my 20s. My father is just opposite. My father, already in his 70s, he likes all these candies. All these small candies, he likes so much. And I don't like any chocolate candies. It's just opposites. Small children likes candies, and the other ones, slowly get it off. No, he likes candies so much, right? Okay, so what I'm saying is that, out of the people who likes chocolates, and people who like chocolate and who do not like chocolate, just keep these two people. And then I show this picture of the chocolate, and then everybody sees that as a mistake that as a real chocolate, right? Okay. Now my question. What is this? What is your answer? Swiss chocolate. Right? It's a Swiss chocolate. Right? Okay. Now my question is, what is your reaction? And those people who like it will say, I'm sure you will distribute this to us. Those who like the chocolate will say this. And others will say, it's fine, right? There's no affinity, right? So your mind is not pulled. Your mind is not pulled. The second person, the mind is not pulled towards the chocolate. The first person, the mind is pulled towards the chocolate. But in the first place, what is the distortion? Seeing this picture of the chocolate as the real chocolate. It happens to both, yes, no. It happens to both. Now the reaction is different. You agree with me or not? Likewise, self-grasping ignorance is the initial stage. So in this case, there are two stages. The first one is you see the picture of the chocolate as the real chocolate. This is the first phase. Then it is followed by the next phase. What is the next phase? Reaction. How you react. This is the second phase. You're getting it? Okay. Now, self-grasping ignorance is the first phase, and the self-centered attitude is the second phase. Self-grasping ignorance says that this self, a subjectively existing self, is an objectively existing self, right? What really exists as a self is what? Subjectively existing self. But then the self-grasping ignorance, it misconceives this subjectively existing self to be objectively existing self, like the paper chocolate as a real chocolate, right? This is the first phase. This is the first phase. And then this first phase, does it mean that all of you automatically feel attached to the chocolate? No. All of you are equally mistaken in seeing the paper chocolate as the real chocolate. You agree with me or not? Likewise, everyone, or say arahats, they have no self-grasping ignorance. They have no self-grasping ignorance. But I'll give an example. Say, arahats, when they see the objective, subjectively existing person, when they see the arahats and the ordinary people, say two groups. Say the person comes in front of the two groups, right? So the appearance and the engagement, you know the distinction? Okay. Now, how does this person appear to the arahats? And how does this person appear to the ordinary people? Objectively, subjectively. To the arhats first. Huh? Objectively, subjectively. Okay, how many say to the arhats, the person appears as subjectively? Okay, the person appears as objectively. Huh? Why are you saying objectively? Arhats. Yeah. How the person appears as objectively? Huh? Okay, to the arhats. Or the person appears to the arhat, how does the person appear to the arhat? As objectively. Objectively is mistaken. Still it appears as objectively. How many of you say yes? How come? How come? What answer? Why? Why? Huh? Or engagement-wise, there's no error, right? Appearance, there's always distortion. This appearance, wrong appearance, is because of cognitive obscuration. Arahats have still cognitive obscurations, right? So, the arahats, when the person appears as objectively real. But they engage that as empty of objective existence or as subjectively real. So why the arahats have the person, while the person is empty from the object side, still they appear as objectively real in an erroneous way? Why? Because of the cognitive obscuration, right? What made you think that they still have the cognitive obscuration? Because they are not Buddha yet, right? Okay, so this is the line of reasoning. With this mind, now the self appears to the arhats and to the ordinary beings. And how does the self appear? As objectively or subjectively? To the arhats? To the common people? No doubt. In both cases, the same object appears as objectively real. But the arhats will say that this perception is wrong. Ordinary people say this perception is correct. You're getting it? Okay, now go back to the example of the chocolate. See, the paper chocolate is seen by all of you. Those who like chocolate, those who do not like chocolate. The paper chocolate is seen as a real chocolate, Swiss chocolate, right? So this is the first phase. This first phase, where all of you are mistaken. Where all you are mistaken, you misconceive the paper chocolate to be a real chocolate. Picture of a chocolate to be a real chocolate. This is like the self-grasping ignorance, where you view the self as objectively real. Now, what is the second phase? It's a reaction. Second phase is reaction. Okay, those who like the chocolate, what is the reaction? Those who like the chocolates, how they react to this perception? Pull. In what way? They feel attached to it. I like it, right? Okay, what about the reaction of those people who do not like the chocolates? It's fine. So there's no pull, there's no push. And particularly, if the person is severely suffering from diabetes and very angry towards the chocolate, right? Why did you bring the chocolate here? Right? You're pushed. You're pushed. And people who like it, they're pulled. And people who do not, they go into ignorance, neutral, which is ignorance. I don't like it. I'm not pushed. But still, there's a real chocolate there. This is ignorance. So the ignorance perpetuates. Right? Okay. Now the self-grasping ignorance, self-centered attitude, which is the first phase, which is the second phase? Self-grasping is the first phase, and the self-cherishing is the second phase. What is the unique feature of this self, the unique feature of the first phase? You simply distort the reality. You simply distort the reality, seeing the subjective self as the real self. As the objective self, this is the first phase. First phase, you simply distort the reality. What is the unique feature of the second phase? The reaction takes place. That I like this self. I like this objective existence self. This reaction, I like this. You know, I like this self. I like this objective existence self. So this reaction comes. Like the people who like the chocolate, when they see it as a real chocolate, then I like it. I want it. The reaction. That reaction is the self-centered attitude. I'm more important than others, right? This objective existence self is more important than others, right? Okay, that is the self-centered attitude. Now, you got it up to this point? Okay, some of you have questions, I know, right? For a time, you just understand this much. Just understand this much, then I'll move to the second, to go into the subtleties of the self-centered attitude. Subtle explanation of self-centered. For a time, do you understand it? This is a very loose presentation of the distinction between the self-grasping and the self-centered. What's the self-grasping? The first phase, second phase? Second. First phase, self-grasping. Self-centered attitude, first phase, second phase. Second phase. What is the unique feature of self-grasping? Distortion of the reality, which means distortion of the subjectively existent self to be objectively existent self. Distortion happens. This is the self-grasping. What is the self-centered? This objective existent self, I like it. I feel attached to. This is self-centered attitude. This is in the loose presentation of the distinction between self-grasping and self-centered. Self-centered is like a reaction on top of, reaction built on the first phase. Right? The first phase is the distortion of the reality, and the second one, self-centered attitude, is what? Is the reaction which is built on the first phase. This is a very general presentation. Now going into detail. Self-centered attitude. Self-centered attitude is of two kinds. One which is gross and the other one is subtle. The gross self-centered attitude and subtle self-centered attitude. The one that I explained just immediately before is the gross self-centered attitude. The self-centered attitude which I explained. Self-centered attitude which is second phase reaction built on the basis of the first phase is the gross self-centered attitude, which is I am more important than others. I am more important than others. This is a gross self-centered attitude. Gross self-centered attitude is distorted in its It is a wrong mind. Gross self-centered attitude is a wrong mind. Whereas the subtle self-centered attitude is not a wrong mind, it's a valid mind. Subtle self-centered attitude is a valid mind. There's nothing wrong in it. Subtle self-centered attitude is not a wrong mind. It is not a deceptive mind. It is not a deceptive mind. You feel free to ask me how. Not yet answered. At least at this point you should say that subtle self-centered attitude is not a wrong mind. It is a valid mind. Okay, so now let me give an example. You go to enjoy the Mughal garden. You go to enjoy the Mughal garden. Mughal garden is the most beautiful garden in Delhi. I don't know whether it is in the most beautiful garden in India, but for sure it's the most beautiful garden in Delhi. Yes, no?
I would say so.
Okay, let's say yes. Let's say yes, right? Say, one of the beautiful gardens in India. Right? Same. It is one of the beautiful gardens in India. So you want to go there to enjoy the Mughal garden in Delhi. When you go there, it so happens that you're very late and it is, 1 p.m. and power cut. There's total power cut. And then you have a very small torch, mobile torch. You have a mobile torch, very small torches there. And then you are just in the middle of the Mughal garden. Do you enjoy the garden? You don't see anything, right? Now, say you use your small torch. With this small torch, what can you enjoy? You can enjoy one individual flower. One individual flower, is that a garden? This is not a garden. You came here to enjoy the one flower or garden? Now you are not enjoying the garden. You are just enjoying one flower. Because this life, why you are not enjoying the full garden? Why enjoying just small garden, but small flower? Because this light is not as bright, right? So what is the mistake of this light? The light is to eliminate darkness. Does it eliminate darkness? Yes. But what's the problem with it? It is very weak. It is so narrow. It is not pervasive. Likewise, the subtle self-centered attitude, it is valid. But it's not pervasive. It is very narrow in thinking. That we says that arahats, what the arahats have. I want happiness. I don't want suffering. Right? This I am important. This I is important. This I is important. This I, is it important or not? Yes, it is important. Right? Just as this I is important, every single individual I is important. Yes, no? Right? But this arahat, when he asks, are this important? They will say yes. But 24 hours, they think about which I? This I or all others I? This I, which means so narrow, right? This I is important. So it's like a small torch. It's a small torch. Just focus on the self. I'm important, right? So it does not, it simply remains oblivious. It simply remains oblivious to the others. Sentiments, others' happiness, others' concern. So it is simply focused on the self. There's nothing wrong in it, but the problem is that it is so narrow in scope. So therefore, this is known as the mind is centered on which? One single self, self-centered attitude. It is centered to only one single self, self-centered. We self, myself, not others. So therefore, it is valid mind. It is a valid mind. It says, I'm important. You are right. It is important. But you cannot say that, but you are not saying that just as I'm important, everyone is important. This is not what you are saying. You are saying you are simply oblivious to others. Right? So the scope of the thinking is very narrow, confined to the self, just one person. Therefore, it becomes very narrow thinking, very narrow thinking. Although it's valid, it's a very narrow valid thinking. Right? Therefore, it is the known as subtle self-centered attitude. Right? Okay. Now, with this, we see that the miseries are created by the involuntary pull and push. And what made you have this involuntary pull and push is because of the, first of all, you create an objective existence self. Objective existence self. And then your mind is pulled and pushed. Say, for example, say, how many of you have dreamt last night? What dream did you have? Anyone? Who likes to share something? Huh? Any dream? Huh? Dream? What dream?
It was a very long, complicated dream.
No, just tell me one. Just tell me one incident. Just tell me one incident which is so pleasing, which is so pleasant. Anyone who dreamt of, you know, studying psychology? Huh? Some people, when they are into the bodhicitta retreat, about emptiness, bodhicitta, many people, they dreamt about meditative emptiness in the dreams. Okay. Anyone who had a pleasant dream last night? Anyone? Or anyone who had a pleasant dream in your life, whole life? Any pleasant dream? Yes, what pleasant dream?
In real life, we have bought these tea sachets, but we don't like the flavor of it. So in my dream, I dreamt of an idea where I could use the tea sachets and put elaichi in it, so that it gets better flavor.
Okay. So let's say you have a cardamom tea sachet, right? Okay, and you like it in the dream, right? Now the same the cardamom tea sachet in the dream, that dream cardamom tea sachet, do you like now? Now, why not?
Yeah, I like it.
You like it. It's delicious, right? It's delicious. The dream one. Yeah, we're talking about the dream, not the real one. You dream, you like it? No, don't say what answer he's expecting. Oh, that's good. Okay, this is the real answer. I don't care about it, right? In the dream, it does matter. In the dream, it does matter. But the moment you come to realize it's dream, I don't care about it, right? In America, in New York, one of my friends came to pick me up to take me to Jackson Heights. Jackson Heights. Then I was in my, the bathroom chapel. So I was a little worried, right? Oh, should I wear, something else? And he said, Dorji, this is New York. Who cares? So likewise, the moment you wake up, In the dream, you might have, you know, you're so hungry and getting, say, your mother's bringing a hot pizza, you just crave for it. You just crave for that. Your mother's bringing the pizza. You're about to take the first bite. And your mother wakes you up. And the pizza disappears. Right? Okay. So, when you wake up, the dream pizza, while you are so infatuated with this dream pizza, while in the dream, the moment you wake up, who cares? Right? About this dream pizza. Because you know that this is metal creation. You're getting it? This is metal creation. Okay. Likewise, we see that same in the dream, this pizza really pulled you. In the dream, this pizza pulled you. Why? Because you thought that it's objectively real. Right? The moment you wake up, you see that it is empty of objective reality. The pull stops. Right? The pull stops. Likewise, all experiences of pain, pleasure, whatever we have in samsara, they are like the pains and pleasures of the dream of samsara. Right? If you wake up from the sleep, then the pull and push of that automatically stops. This is nirvana. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll come back at, say, 11:15.